I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. When Jean Guerrero was a child, she was enchanted by her eclectic father, Marco Antonio. His fantastical descriptions of the world around her drew Jean in and actually made it difficult for her to distinguish between fantasy and reality. Yet as she grew older, she noticed his behavior change. He became more withdrawn and was often severely critical of his daughter. Marco Antonio was in and out of Jean's life, traveling all over the world, experimenting with drugs and engaging in self-destructive behavior. Jean's mother said he was a schizophrenic. Jean, who was a journalist, engaged her investigative training to learn more about her father and trace his steps so she could better understand him and determine whether he really was suffering from a debilitating mental illness or was a mystic like his ancestors. It was a journey that led Jean on a self-destructive path which almost mirrored her father's. Jean Guerrero, an immigration reporter with KPBS in San Diego, shares her experiences in the book Crux, a cross-border memoir. She joins us today on Fronteras. She begins our conversation with the first time she observed that her father wasn't behaving like other dads.
He started to do things that were very strange, you know, like wrapping himself up in aluminum foil to try to block what he said were the voices of CIA agents that were being beamed into his head. So the memory that most sticks out to me from my childhood of something really being different and something really having gone wrong with my father is I remember visiting this condominium where he was staying after my mother kicked him out of the house. Things were really deteriorating in our house, so she kicked him out. And so he was living in this condominium, and he completely destroyed the place. And I remember walking around inside of the condominium and not at all being able to comprehend how a human being, let alone my father, had done something like this to an apartment. I mean, he'd punched holes into the wall. He had stripped the floor bare of its carpet. He'd torn the electrical wiring out of the walls. Basically, he was trying to find hidden microphones or cameras or anything that would explain the voices that he was hearing in his head.
And it's interesting because you point out that later in the book when you are older and you're studying in college, and then you discover this article that there are a number of people who say that they are subjects of a CIA experiment, and they exhibit the same behaviors as your father. And then you also discover an article that perhaps this is all based on fact. So what did you discover when you started looking further into, you know, maybe my dad really isn't schizophrenic, as my mother said he was. Maybe he really was a subject of some government experimentation.
Right. So I found those articles when I was in journalism school, and I was just starting to have conversations with my father. He'd been traveling around the world trying to escape the CIA, and I had had very little contact with him for very many years. And he came back and he started to tell me his stories about why he thought the CIA was targeting him. And so that's when I started to do research, because I felt, first of all, I felt that he didn't sound the way I expected someone with paranoid schizophrenia would sound. He was trying to be logical. He was trying to be scientific. Whenever I would ask him questions like, how do you know you're not hallucinating? He would resort to these very sort of scientific explanations like, you know, whenever I was in an airplane, the CIA would never target me with the electromagnetic rays because of the casing of aluminum alloys that protected me. So I ended up feeling like as his daughter and as a journalist, I had a duty to investigate the possibility that what he was saying was true, mostly because I discovered MKUltra, which was an actual CIA mind control experiment conducted in the 1950s and 60s, mostly on drug addicts, prostitutes, immigrants, prisoners. So people in the population with very little power or in some cases credibility. And so my father believed that the CIA was doing something similar now, but with much more sophisticated technology. One of the things that I explore in my book was this possibility that my father really was targeted. There's thousands of people who call themselves targeted individuals and who believe the same things that my father believes. So I really felt this compulsion to investigate that line of inquiry. And it led me down a real rabbit hole. I mean, my whole desire, my whole obsession to understand my father and to try to understand why he had changed led me down so many different rabbit holes, in many cases, very self-destructive ones, where I was sort of trying to recapture the magical, curious father of my earliest years by becoming him, by sort of conjuring him in myself and starting to experiment with drugs and a lot of self-destructive behaviors. So there were many lines of inquiry that I explore in the book.
So when you fell into journalism, you were offered an opportunity to go to Mexico at the height of the cartel drug war, when there was murder around every corner, and Mexico was one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a journalist. And yet you embarked upon that journey in order to sort of feel a connection with your father, who actually was with you for a while in Mexico when you began that journey. But you also sort of dove, as you were mentioning, into a rabbit hole of family history and sort of this bloody history of Mexico that all seemed intertwined.
Yes, exactly. You know, I grew up on the border, and when my father wasn't around, I saw Mexico as this opportunity to explore him and to understand him, because he was inaccessible to me while he was traveling around the world, but Mexico was just right across the border. So as a teenager, I started visiting Mexico, and then eventually, as you said, I made my way there as a foreign correspondent. And part of what drew me to the country was the fact that it was experiencing these extremely high levels of violence, in particular towards journalists. I see him as sort of the ultimate migrant who was always crossing borders, not only between countries, but between danger and safety, the legal and the illegal. And I began to cross all of those borders in pursuit of him, in my obsession with understanding him. And one of the things that I discovered in Mexico, which was really surprising to me, was that my father had a great-grandmother who was known as La Divina, the diviner. She was a clairvoyant, a curandera in Tlaltenango de Sánchez Román in southern Mexico, in Zacatecas, after the Mexican Revolution. And she also heard voices and saw things that nobody else could see, but she was attributed with having a gift. And I actually visited the town where she was from, and people remembered her as being very prestigious and people coming to visit her from very far away. So in the book, I also explore these parallels, which I discovered when I went to Mexico, this sort of magical aspect of my family history, where I investigate the possibility that my father inherited something from this ancestor. You know, even without knowing about her, he had started doing things that she had done. For example, he created this very elaborate garden of curative crops that he was using to try to heal people in our family of various ailments. My grandmother swears that he cured her chihuahua of blindness with these powders that he made. And his cupboards are just overflowing with tinctures and powders and essentially potions that he makes because he's experimenting. But these are parallels that really do exist between him and this curandera great-grandmother, and I wanted to see where they would lead me.
Well, you had this connection with your father when you were much younger, and then as you sort of entered puberty and you became a teenager, he became much more critical of you, your personality, your behavior, and even as an adult, you encountered that same criticism. But later in the book, as you're sort of going through Mexico together, you find sort of a common connection where you have, at least in the book, it appears so that there's less of that criticism and a little bit more of finding things in common. I'm just curious, what's your relationship right now with your father? Does he still occasionally fall into where he criticizes you in a way that's just heartbreaking? Or have you come to have, again, a closer connection with your father to where you're older now, he's older now, you're coming together in a way?
Yeah. So actually, the whole process of writing the book brought us together in a way that I'm really grateful for. I mean, and not just the relationship with me and my father, but me and my grandmother, various people in my family. The whole reporting process for the book really brought us together. But in particular with my father, who'd never really had the opportunity to express himself and to tell people what he believed he had endured, because people often just dismissed him as having a mental illness. You know, he and I spoke for hours and hours, for years and years, just endless conversations where I was just listening to him. I mean, he's told me that he's incredibly grateful for it, that he's never felt so much attention in his life. And so I think at first this made him really uncomfortable, these interactions where just the fact that I was so interested in his life and that he'd had such a huge impact on me without even being there, I think that made him really uncomfortable and led to some of the criticisms. But then when I engaged with him as a journalist, for some reason, the vehicle of journalism, having this sort of more formal structure to our conversations, made him feel comfortable opening up to me in a way that he never had before. So when he saw it as a sort of journalistic transaction, he felt like he could open up to me and trust me. And that allowed us to... He's had an incredible reaction to the book. I was very, very concerned about what his reaction would be. Obviously, he knew I was writing the book, but you never know how somebody's going to react to finally reading it. And he actually has not read the whole thing yet. He says he's trying to work up the courage, but it's out there. He has it, and he's been incredibly supportive. He showed up to my book launch party and just like drove up on his motorcycle and stood in the crowd watching. And apparently, one of my uncles who read the book called him scandalized to tell him that I had portrayed my father as a drug addict because my father did experiment with crack cocaine for many years. And my dad told me this sort of amused, and he told me that he defended the book. And he said, "This isn't a novel. This is a memoir. I am an addict." And he's never said anything like that before. He's never admitted to suffering from addictions or anything like that. So it's pretty remarkable. His reaction has been great, and we have become a lot closer. We have a much easier relationship now that the whole reporting process for the book took place.
Well, I think I have to commend you, because I don't think too many people who went through what you went through as a young person would have ever wanted to reconnect with their father and try to figure out really how the gears turned in his mind. So I hope that perhaps your book might be an inspiration to others who might feel a disconnection to perhaps try to reconnect and see how things have changed over the years.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I reconnected with him actually allowed me to sort of free myself of him, because this obsession that I had with my father was an unhealthy obsession, and it was creating a lot of damage internally for me. But when I finally sort of turned around to face him and embrace the love that I had for him and how complex it was, and I realized that he wasn't someone that I should worship, nor someone who I had to reject. So I didn't have to follow him or hate him. I could just accept him as this very complicated person with so many layers, both good and bad, to his personality. Then I was able to be free of him. And so I think that's part of the value for me of re-engaging with my father, was the ability to finally become my own person and sort of let him go.
Jean Guerrero is an immigration reporter with KPBS in San Diego. She's the author of Crux, a cross-border memoir. When we come back, 11 communities in the Rio Grande Valley decided to tackle high rates of obesity and diabetes among their citizens by linking cities and towns with hike and bike paths.
The School of Public Health started talking to these 11 communities around us about the importance of healthy eating, active living, to try and reduce these rates.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. On the southern tip of Texas, Cameron County is bordered by the Gulf of Mexico to the east and Mexico to the west. It ranks in the bottom 10% of the state in terms of overall health factors. To counter these health risks and to spur activity and tourism, a coalition of 11 communities in Cameron County is developing a transportation and tourism active plan that will link the communities with 428 miles of on- and off-street hike and bike and water trails. I began my trip to the lower Rio Grande Valley with a stop at 7th and Park, a small coffee shop and bike shop located near the Southern Pacific Linear Park in Brownsville. The park was an old railroad switching yard, cleared to create a 9-mile trail that leads to the Palo Alto Battlefield National Historic Park, the site of the first major battle of the U.S.-Mexico War in 1846. Graham Sevier Schultz is the owner of 7th and Park. He says the proximity of a hike and bike trail attracted him to establish his business there, which is also close to museums and the zoo.
I was lucky enough to find a vacant lot that has great frontage to the hike and bike trail. It's right near Linear Park, which is kind of the anchor of the battlefield trail here in Brownsville. It's basically become kind of like an outdoor event center. It was a real blessing. Made our decision pretty easy as soon as we found the location, and it's worked out great.
Dr. Rose Gowan says 7th and Park is a prime example of trail-oriented development. Gowan is a physician and city commissioner in Brownsville.
We're known for our beautiful beaches, as we already said, but we're not necessarily known as a place that you can go to be physically active.
The health risks in Cameron County drew Gowan towards more health-oriented policymaking. She says the UT Health School of Public Health in Brownsville identified 1 in 3 residents are diabetic, 80% are obese or overweight, and close to 70% are uninsured.
All of that combines to be a perfect storm, and the School of Public Health started talking to these 11 communities around us about the importance of healthy eating, active living, to try and reduce these rates.
The hope is to have 428 on-street and off-street multi-use trails connecting the communities of Brownsville, Harlingen, Laguna Vista, Combs, Los Fresnos, Los Indios, Port Isabel, Rio Hondo, San Benito, South Padre Island, and Rancho Viejo. Rancho Viejo is a golf-centered community marked with a water tower shaped like a golf ball. This is one of the communities that will connect not just with a hike and bike trail, but with 78 miles of paddling and kayaking trails along this stretch of the Gulf. Rancho Viejo is located in one of the Rio Grande River's many resacas, the finger-like projections that branch out from the main waterway. Eva Garcia is a planner with the city of Brownsville.
Rancho Viejo is in between Harlingen and Brownsville, and to the west, like northwest, is Los Indios, and to the east is Los Fresnos. So it's, if you were biking throughout the county and needed to stop for a break, Rancho Viejo would be your oasis to take a break, to have some breakfast, stop at the club.
Harlingen is a hot spot for birding. It also has over 1,200 acres of public parks. McKelvey Park is an 11-acre park with an existing 2-mile trail. Rodrigo Davila, planning and development director with the city of Harlingen, says McKelvey Park is one of the most used parks in Harlingen.
There's a lot of playgrounds for the kids. There's also some exercise equipment from the adults. We do 5-kin races out of here. It goes down a trail, which can be used as a bike trail, as a running trail, as a walking trail. A lot of people bring their pets. It's pet friendly. It connects this park to the expressway, and then across the expressway there's an additional park which we are working on more connectivity to kind of bring all the parks together.
The only way these plans can come to fruition is with funding. The Valley Baptist Legacy Foundation specifically supports programs that support healthy lifestyles and increase access to health care in the Rio Grande Valley. It has already provided a 2-year, $2 million grant to construct a 1.8-mile extension to the historic Battlefield Trail in Brownsville to connect to Los Fresnos, and $1.2 million to connect McKelvey Park in Harlingen to another nearby park. The Lower Rio Grande Valley Active Plan isn't just a means to increase tourism and activity. According to the U.S. Census, 34% of Cameron County residents live in poverty. Many don't own cars. Commissioner Gowan says the Active Plan is for these residents as well.
So it's not just about attracting the tourists. It's also about giving those routes and safety to the people that don't have a choice. You know, I own two cars and four bikes, but there are a lot of people that only own one bike and no car. And what are we doing as communities to make their travel safer and more pleasant?
Still in its beginning stages, the Active Plan has a long way to go before completion, 10 to 15 years. But the work has already begun to make Cameron County a stronger, healthier community, one step at a time. Thanks for listening to us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Norma Martinez produced the broadcast. Our executive producers are Steve Short and Fernando Ortiz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.